Greetings, everyone. My name is Christian. I recognize many of you. I see some new faces here tonight, and then some people are here for the first time, and I'm glad you're here. This is a community that is open to whoever would like to come, and so I'm so glad to see some new faces, and also some faces that have been around in the past and are here again tonight. It's a real joy for me to be in this place, and I have to tell you, I was on a long drive today, 8 hours, and I passed at least 200 churches. I'm not exaggerating. There are times on Route 13 where I drove where you pass 3 churches in less than 30 seconds. And as I drove up, my thought was, I really love the church that I'm a part of. And if you're here for the first time, this room here is not where we normally meet. We usually meet in a different room on the other side of this building. That, to me, demonstrates that our church is not where we meet. It's not a building. And when I say that I love the church that I'm a part of, it's the group of people that are here. And I am confident that all of us are here because God intends for something to be communicated to us that he wouldn't communicate to us otherwise. And when we gather together to worship him, it is my belief that he addresses us. He does that to draw us closer to himself, to challenge us, to comfort us, and also to unsettle us so that we would be the men and women that he made us to be. And that's my belief that I have in my mind and heart as I undertake our study for tonight. If you are here for the first time, tonight you are coming in at the end of a series of sermons that we've been doing for about 2 months. I want you to grab the Bible. Everyone, whether you're here for the first time or not, grab one of these black Bibles here and find your way to the center, the book of Proverbs and the 6th chapter of that book. And this is going to be on page 513 of these Bibles. And in chapter 6 of Proverbs, there is a list. And it is a list of 7 things that the Lord hates. Kathleen, in her prayer, there was a refrain. Did you hear what she said over and over again? Your steadfast love endures forever. This is from the Psalms. The psalmist says this. And it's a great reminder to us that God's love has no end. And in this series, we've also had to see that this God, whose love has no end, is also a God who hates certain things. And we've been repeating this idea that God's hatred is in service to his love. The person who loves must hate that which inhibits their love. And God is like that. And in this list, we see there are 7 things that he hates. And on verse 16 of chapter 6, we see the beginning of this list. And we have gone once, 1 week on each one of the 7 things. And that brings us to tonight, the last in this list. And look down there at the second half of verse 19. And this is what we're going to talk about tonight. This is the 7th thing that we learned the Lord hates. One who sows discord in a family. Everyone in here, every one of you, has some form of family. Some of you are parents. Some of you are children. Actually, all of you are children. Some of you are grandparents. Some of you are brothers and sisters, cousins. Family. The Lord hates one who sows discord in a family. I have a book on my shelf written by a man named Douglas Coupland, and I've never read it, but I've read the title, and I think it's true. The title is All Families Are Psychotic. What we're going to do tonight is to look at one scene from one story of a family, and we're going to see what it looks like when discord is sown. And we're not going to look at the whole story, it's a very long story. But before we do that, I want to dwell for a moment on something in this text in Proverbs. The story we're going to look at is in Genesis, but I want to stay in Proverbs for a moment to show you how important this last one in our list is. I wish that all of you had been here for all 7 of them, because for me to say this means something significant after I've said what I've said about the other 6. This last one is very important. I have a friend who I pray with on Thursday mornings. I have a small group of guys I pray with. And one of them this past week was, we were talking after we prayed, and he said to me, he said, Christian, I was looking at the list in Proverbs again. I noticed that this week is the last in the list. And he asked this question. He said, does it mean anything that the family, that the one who sows discord in a family, does it mean anything that that's the last in the list? Is that significant? And I paused for a moment. I had been studying this, and I thought, I hope he doesn't get it, because I want to say this on Sunday night. He then said, does it have anything to do with the way the list opens? Because that seems to say something about the last one. Look with me at verse 16. It says, there are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. Now, one way to answer this question of his, is there something significant, that is number seven, would be to say that it is an afterthought. It's not as important as the others. Because the guy got his pen, the poet who wrote this, sat down at his desk, and he thought, there are six things that the Lord hates, and I've got to write these down. And then he wrote, there are six things that the Lord hates. And then his conscience got the better of him, and he said, maybe there's more than six. I guess I can think of a seventh. And then wrote, there are seven things. And then wrote the list, so that the last one was sort of an afterthought. That's one way you could interpret this setup, right? Does that make sense? Now, thankfully, this is not the only place in Proverbs where we see the poet giving a list. Some of you maybe have read the whole book in Proverbs, and you'll recognize this. There are three things that are too wonderful for me, four that I cannot understand. This is what the poet writes. The way of an eagle in the sky, that's pretty amazing. The way of a snake on a rock, yeah, that's hard to understand. The way of a ship on the seas, that's pretty amazing too. And then the fourth one in this list, the way of a man with a woman. Is that the least wonderful, you think, in this list? There's another place where this poet does the same sort of thing. He says, there are three things which are stately in their stride. That means like this. There are four that are stately in their gait. First, a rooster, prancing around so proudly. Second, a lion, the most frightening beast in the whole of nature. Third, the he-goat, the one with the coolest facial hair. And then fourth, I thought that was funny. He doesn't say the facial hair, but fourth is a king striding in front of his people. Does that sound like the least important of the list? No. This is a literary convention that the poet is using. When giving a list, and if a poet wants to draw the reader's attention, especially to the last one in the list, they'll do this. There are X things, and then X plus one things. And it's the X plus one, for those of you who are mathematicians, that is the most important. Now, look at those words again in the end of the second half of verse 19. One who sows discord in a family. Why do you suppose this would be the most important in the list? First of all, I want to clarify this. The word discord, some of you might know what that means. It can stand for strife or contention, fighting, but its roots are sort of in the musical realm. Some of you who know music know what it means when there is discordance in a song or a sound. When you have two or three notes together and they fit nicely together, that makes a chord, and you have harmony. Do you know what that sounds like? It makes you feel nice when you hear it. It feels good to hear notes that go well together. Discord is when you have one or two notes that fit, but then a third or fourth note that don't fit with the other one. Have you ever experienced this when someone's singing and they're off key? What does it do to you when you hear that? Makes you wince. It hurts your spinal cord, right? Have you ever experienced that? That's discord. And it's a very effective term because it captures something that's hard to put into words. Discord is when you have two or three different things that are put together, and when they come together, it's awful. They fight with each other. They're terrible. They're at one another. There's no peace, and it makes you wince. Music can do that, but I believe, and if you agree with me, then show me by nodding, that there is nothing like a family to hold the potential to create discord. You agree with this? I'll tell you the first reason why I'm sure this mattered most in this list. You ready for this? It has to do with the personal life of the man who wrote these words. Do you know who wrote Proverbs? Solomon. Okay, Solomon. Some of you know his family history. Some of you might not. He had a family just like all of us. He had a mom and a dad. He had siblings. Some of them were half-brothers and half-sisters, etc. And he had a family, Solomon. And it doesn't tell us this in the Bible, but I think it's fair to imagine. What if when he was an adolescent, one day, he was sitting in the living room with mom and dad? They were on the couch, their favorite television program had just ended. and they were sitting together, and what if Solomon said to his mom and dad, "Mom, Dad, would you tell me the story of when you met?" His mom's name was Bathsheba, and his dad's name was David. If his dad were to tell the story truthfully, and we know this because it is in the Bible, you can read this whole story, he would have to start by saying, "Son, the first time I met your mom, I was spying on women taking baths from the roof, and I saw her naked on the roof taking a bath, and I decided I had to have her, and so I went and got her. I slept with her, she became pregnant, I found out she had a husband who was off at war, I had him murdered, then I took her for my wife. That's how I met your mom." You know, we chuckle at that, but when it became clear what had happened, what David had done in this moment, his friend Nathan came and told him, "The sword will never depart from your family from now on because of," he didn't say these words, but this is what he meant, "because of this discord you have sown." That baby that she became impregnated with, they got married, the baby died, and David was heartbroken. He and Bathsheba came together again, they had another son, that was Solomon. After that time, David had other sons, one named Amnon, another named Absalom. He had a daughter named Tamar. You know, one of those sons raped his half-sister, and then the other brother killed that rapist. 2 years he waited and plotted and then killed him. Then after that, that brother, Absalom, went into hiding and waited for years and years. He bided his time until he came back to the kingdom where his father was ruling, David, and then he overthrew him and usurped his throne and tried to have his father killed by raising an army up against his dad. Then his dad tried to show mercy to his son. He forgave him. He never gave up on trying to kill his father until he himself was murdered. This was the family history of Solomon. This man knew how dangerous and deadly family dynamics could be. He knew from experience, as he grew up with brothers who were murdering each other and trying to kill dad, that families are places where discord becomes extraordinarily dangerous, deadly, and destroys life. That is the personal reason why he put this last in the list. Now, there's not only a personal reason, there's also a universal reason why this is in the end of the list, and it's this: that Solomon knew it, and I know it, and you know it. It's not only his family that was messed up like this. Solomon was raised reading the stories, certainly, of the patriarchs in Genesis. And in those stories, what you find is one after another, pictures of families where people are like notes that don't fit together. And it causes strife and destruction. Solomon knew it about those families, and God knows it about your family. You might think that your family is the only one that has some issues. And I don't just mean maybe your spouse and you, or if you're single, just your parents or your siblings. Families, the families that we find ourselves in with blood relatives, families, and by the way, Jesus would say that this is his family. Families like the church are full of strife, and they're places where strife leads from bad to worse. And that's the universal reason why this is left. Is there anyone in here who disagrees with this idea that families can be uniquely deadly?
I want to look at the story with you now.
A story in which it's a beautiful story. It's the story of Joseph. Now, some of you know this. It's one of the just broadest and most beautiful stories in the Old Testament. If you flip back to Genesis 37, this story stretches a dozen chapters in Genesis. And it's an amazing story. And there's so much in it. And I'm going to talk just about the beginning of it, a little bit of it. And I can tell you that there are so many themes and brilliant ideas in it that we won't touch upon tonight. If you want, and if you would do this, take some time and read it on your own later on. You'll learn a lot more than what we're going to look at tonight. But I just want to look at the unfolding of just three verses which show us three characters and how they sow discord. The characters are a man named Jacob. Jacob is the dad. What you need to know about Jacob is that sometimes he's called Israel. God gave him the name Israel. Sometimes he's referred to as Jacob. Sometimes he's called Israel. When you read the Old Testament, you might get confused and think these are two different characters, but they're the same. Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons. And they have names like Reuben, Simeon, Levi, etc. Benjamin. Does anybody know all 12 of them? My favorite is Reuben because I love that sandwich. 12 sons.
And then one of them in particular is very important in this story, and it's Joseph. Let's just read together at 37. What I'm going to do is I'm going to stop when I need to point out a picture of some discord being sown. All right? 37 starts like this. Jacob settled in the land where his father had lived as an alien, the land of Canaan. This is the story of the family of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was shepherding the flocks with his brothers. He was a helper to the sons of Bilhah and Zilpha, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Now, Israel, remember that's Joseph, Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his children because he was the son of his old age, and he had made him a long robe with sleeves. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Once, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. I'm going to stop there. Again, this story is rich and broad, but I want to just focus on three verses and pick out of each one of them a picture of what it looks like when someone sows discord. Let's start with verse 3. Look at it again. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his children because he was the son of his old age, and he had made him a long robe with sleeves. But let's stop there. Israel, or Jacob, the father of these 12, had a favorite son. We learn from this verse that there was one son who he loved more than the others, and we learn the reason. It was because this son was the son of his old age. When a person got older, it was a great surprise to have a son, especially in these days. And so we learn that his feelings for this one son were stronger and greater than his feelings for all the other sons. We learn one other thing. He made him a shirt with long sleeves. In some translations, you have this coat of many colors. Parents, do you ever feel one way toward one child of yours and another way toward another child? No, you always have exact equality for your feelings toward your children. It's not true.
It's not fair.
That's exactly right. In fact, my own parents are here. What if they stood up? Yes! Okay. Let me just say this. Jacob had stronger feelings for one son than for the others, and there was a reason why. And I have to say that the moment we begin to believe that we can control our feelings, we're deceiving ourselves. Sometimes you feel differently towards different children, and that's just the way it is. And I don't believe that that's necessarily wrong. There might be a reason why this child evokes these feelings in you, and this child evokes these feelings in you. At this point, okay, let's be real. Sometimes one child will be loved, and the other might be annoying. Parents, can we be honest? Here's where a problem arises. Jacob does something that makes it so that all 11 other sons see that he loves this other one more. He gives him a jacket that he doesn't give to any of the others, so that everyone can see it. He didn't have to do that. Now, I want to put aside for a moment the fact that this is one of the most incredible narratives of the history of Israel, and for me to suggest that Joseph might have done otherwise, or Jacob might have done otherwise, is absurd. Yeah, I'll come back to that. Listen, as parents, when you begin to treat one child with all sorts of lavish love, and right in front of the face of the other child, or other children, you do something. You sow discord. Now, I want to talk for a moment about the image of sowing. Do you know, it's not sow as in S-E-W. The word sow is an agricultural term. When a person sows something, they take a seed, which looks like a tiny little dead thing, and they press it into the ground. And in the ground, when there's water in there, and when there's light eventually that begins to break through as the seed grows up, what happens is this tiny dead thing grows into something that's alive. And time passes. At first, it doesn't look like anything. But days go on and on and on. The seasons turn, the seasons change, and then suddenly this thing that was nothing at first is now something quite reasonably sized. It's a big plant of some form. And eventually it will start to grow fruit of some kind, or a vegetable, or it will be a weed, or maybe it will be a thorn bush. And when a parent begins to lavish all sorts of attention on one child and not the other, it might not look like anything at first. But what begins to happen in a situation like that in a family is that there's something planted that starts to grow. And it can be very negative if what's being planted is discord. I think I see that in the story. And I think that if we pause for a moment and ask, if God is one who hates the one who sows discord in a family, is it possible to sow peace in a family or harmony? I know the answer is yes. And all of you parents can think of that for a moment. Or all of you who are not parents yet, who will be someday, can put it in your mind that the way you treat your children will either cause for harmony or discord. Okay, that's for all of you parents. Let's look at the next verse. Verse 4. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him, that's Joseph, more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. Anyone can understand this. If a parent is clearly favoring one child, and if you ask the other child, how are you feeling about this? What are they going to say? Well, I'm angry. I hate this. I feel jealous. I'm frustrated. I'm furious. I'm vexed. I'm fuming. I've had it up to you. Of course, they're angry. And that, just as it's not wrong to feel affection in a different way for one child than another, is it wrong for a child to feel angry when they see something like this? Of course not. Of course not. But what I want you to notice here, and now this is an important point. Joseph's 17, he's a teenager at this point. There's, I think, only one son who's younger, Benjamin. Someone else might know there's another one younger than him. But for the most part, these brothers we're talking about are adults. Okay? They're adult children in their 20s and 30s. Look what they do with their feelings. It says, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him. That is to Joseph. They get angry and they start talking nasty to their brother. Now, this might seem like a fine point, but it's very important. Listen, there's three characters. We have the father, we have the brothers, and we have Joseph. Now, the brothers are really mad. Why are they mad? Who has done something that has aroused this anger and jealousy in them? The father. Who are they angry at, and who do they direct their anger toward? The brother. Now, listen, this is called, I don't know, indirect aggression, maybe? These brothers are angry because of something dad is doing, and instead of talking to dad, they're angry at their brother, and they're constantly talking nasty to him. Now again, this is not a child we're talking about. These are adults. I want you to know this. This is true for families, especially, but also outside of families. When someone does something that makes you angry, the moment you start to talk to other people about what that person did, you don't make any progress for a solution. Let me give you an example. Maybe there's three children in a family. The brother is angry at his sister, and he thinks she's been behaving badly, and so what he does is he calls his brother and starts to tell him about how annoyed he is at their sister. Think about that. What does that do? Maybe even that brother calls mom one day and says, oh, sis is annoying me. I can't stand the way she's behaving, and begins to complain, go on and on about how annoying she is. Or tells dad about what a wrecked sister is. Never talks to sister. You know what that is doing? It's taking a seed and sowing it. And it's a seed that is going to bear ugly fruit, discord. And unless that brother learns to talk directly to the person with whom he's frustrated, it will never get better. It will only get worse. It will only go from discord to worse discord. There will never be harmony between them until that brother gets the guts up to address sister face to face. Now, I want you to think for a moment of your own family. The gripes that you have against people in your family, your parents, your siblings, your cousins, maybe even your children, you're upset with them and you haven't been able to talk to them about something. It is true that often people try to make harmony by avoiding conflict. They think, if I don't say anything, I'll just sweep it under the rug, I'll just push it down, I won't confront that person because it'll just make them upset. That is a sure way to make discord. That's like taking a whole handful of seeds and pushing them into some very fertile soil. Now, these brothers, if they had had the wherewithal to go to their father and say, "Dad, we're glad that you love Joseph, but it's making us feel awful the way that you are treating him and that you don't give us the same respect. We need that because we're your sons too." It's hard for an adult child to do that with their parent. But for all of you adult children, you need to have a conversation like that with your parents. Or all of you high school students, you need to sow some peace with your parents. Or all of you parents, you need to sow some peace between someone else and your family. You need to confront directly, or otherwise you'll have nothing but discord as long as it goes. Okay, one more now. Let me stop for a minute. This is pretty weighty stuff, isn't it? I'm getting the sense from your faces that families are hard. Listen, you don't have to leave tonight. You won't leave tonight with all your family problems cured, okay? I know enough to know that. These are suggestions. Okay, let's look at the next one. Verse 5 says, "Once Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more." We've talked about what father does. We've talked about what brothers do. Here's what Joseph does. Let me read the dreams that he told his brothers. And I want you to imagine now your older brothers and your 17-year-old brother saying this to you. Ready? He said to them, "Listen, this dream that I dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Suddenly, my sheaf rose and stood upright. Then your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." How do you think they felt when they heard that dream? This is very simple for me to say. You don't need to tell your siblings every thought that goes through your mind. His brother said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more because of his dreams and his words. Look, he does it again. He had another dream, and he told it to his brother, saying, "Look, I had another dream. The sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me." Okay, now it's the whole entire universe. And now it's not even like his sheep, it's directly to him. Now, I want to stop for a minute. Again, these are dreams that God gave him, and God worked, but before we get to that, I want to point this out. That Joseph says something to his brothers that can't do anything else but make them hate him even more. Do you see that? And the fact is, there are many times in our lives where we open our mouths where we should have kept them shut. Because there's no way that what we say to the people in our family can do anything but harm them and cause discord and make them either hate us or hurt them badly. Now, I want to stop here for a moment and say that I know that children have a unique capacity to hurt their parents. I've heard high school students talk to their parents in the most heinous ways. And I imagine that someday my children will talk to me in a way that breaks my heart. Or I've seen kids talk to each other in the most destructive ways in families, saying things that they just should not have said. Now, in one sense, I want to say that Joseph was careless here in the way he opened his mouth, because there's no question but that the way he shared this will do nothing but cause strife and discord in this family. Does this family seem like a normal family to you? We have a father who is sowing discord by treating one child better than all the rest. We have brothers who are sowing discord by refusing to address directly their problems with their father, but instead just taking their anger out on their brother. And then we have a brother who's sharing things that he just shouldn't share in the way he does. And so we have discord. Now, every one of you who's sitting here tonight has some form of discord in your own family. And there's a lesson in what happens next that I think is one of the most beautiful lessons there is in the Old Testament, in my mind. One of them. And it's a lesson for this story with this family, but also for your families, because I know a lot of you come from really broken families where you can point to your parents or your siblings and say, they did this wrong and they did that wrong. But if you were honest with yourself, you would have to look at yourself and say, but I actually did this wrong. I failed here, and I failed here too. And Christian started this sermon by reading that passage in Proverbs that says, the Lord hates one who sows discord in a family. And maybe you feel the weight of that as I speak now. But listen to this next message, because this is really important. Listen. What happens because of all of this discord, it starts there in verse 12. I'm not going to read it. I'm going to tell you briefly. These brothers plot to murder their own brother. the 11 decide they're going to kill Joseph. That's how they're going to take care of this. And as he's coming out to them, they decide, we'll kill him. One of the brothers raises an objection, says, let's not kill him. Let's just dig a pit and throw him in it. We'll take his coat, we'll dip it in blood, we'll bring it back to Dad and tell Dad that he was gored by an animal. Then we'll sell him into slavery and we'll make money. And they do this. And you might think as a reader, what's going to happen? This is God's people. Is this the end? Is this where God's people finally fall apart? Is this where the family is so ugly that it ruins everything? But listen to what happens. David is purchased by a group of slave traders. He ends up becoming a slave for a prominent man. He gets accused of something he didn't do in her house and ends up in jail. And you think, it keeps getting worse. And maybe some of you in your families are in jail. But what Joseph does is this. He makes a choice not to give up and do the wrong thing. And he uses the gifts that God has given him, the gifts to interpret dreams. And what we see is this, and it's the word for this is providence. We see that even when people screw up, when they mess up because they plant seeds that are sowing discord in their families, or even when they try to murder their own brothers, when all of this bad stuff happens because of our sin and our folly, God is still able to weave into his design our own mistakes. We see in this story that even when we mess our own families up because we've planted all sorts of seeds and we've worked discord into the lives of our families, that God is still at work and still able to do something that we cannot overcome. That God does something that is better than we could have done, even if we haven't messed up. Somehow, God is so masterful that he weaves our errors into this tapestry that he's at work making. And in this tapestry that he's at work making, he takes this man, Joseph, from prison and brings him over a series of steps. And I challenge you to read this in here. Brings him from one place to another until Joseph, this slave in prison, is the second in command in the land of Egypt. He sits beside Pharaoh and has his entire trust. And the reason is that God was at work all along. This teaches me, and it teaches you, that you can mess up so bad in your family that God can't do something absolutely magnificent. That's not to say he doesn't hate discord, he does. But he is not, he's a masterful musician. And he somehow makes the chorus include your mistakes. Many of you know what happens next. It's fantastic. A famine is revealed to Joseph in his dreams, in the dreams of Pharaoh. And he, knowing that a famine is coming, he's able to take steps that prevent the destruction of all of Egypt. He stores up food for years and years, and then when the famine strikes, Egypt still has food. Meanwhile, his 11 brothers are back in Canaan. And of course, they've forgotten about their brother, whom they thought they killed. Just listen to the irony of the story. These 11 brothers, along with all of the people who are in the surrounding area around Egypt, they are driven because of their need so that they don't starve all to the same place, to Egypt. And every one of them has to confront the person who is in control of the distribution of all the food. Guess who that is? Joseph. And the story is told so artfully, I'm ruining it in a sense. But these 11 brothers end up showing up right there in front of their brother Joseph. He is this mighty man who's been living high in power in Egypt. These brothers who are fleeing a famine have come up to him. And he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. Now, I want you to put yourself in that position for a moment of Joseph. You see the 11 brothers who hated you and tried to kill you. And now, you are their only hope, and they don't even know it's you. Listen, God hates the one who sows discord in a family. Do you know what God loves? The one who sows harmony and peace. Now, I want you to be honest for a minute. Be honest with yourself. If you were in Joseph's place, what would you kind of want to do to those brothers? Would you kind of want to, like, get back at them? Would you? Maybe dig a gigantic pit, throw all 11 of them in there? You know you want that, right? A part of you at least. It's true from the time that we're little children that retribution is one of the most exciting things that we learn about. I have a friend actually, I gotta tell you this story. A friend who's sitting in this church tonight told me this story. This friend actually has their 13 children in the family. And this friend's name is also Joe. Joseph. One day, this Joseph, this is a true story, was out playing in the clover on a summer afternoon. Isn't that a nice setting? Just enjoying himself in nature, taking it all in, 6 years old, just watching the bees take away the pollen. Sister, older sister, comes up behind him, shoves him. Unaware, he's just peaceful. She shoves him. He falls knee first onto a bee. Stings him right in the knee. You ever been stung in the knee? It was bad. Now you're 6 years old when this happens. It's like the end of the world. He was furious. He was so angry. He turned, red-faced, looks at his sister, and she smiles smugly, walks back into the house and goes about her business. Joe sits in the clover field. Sore knee. Begins to plot. Of course he does. How can I get her back? As he sits there, it occurs to him, a punishment that fits what she did to me. He looks around and sees lots of bees. He steps back. He surveys the bee colony at work. He finds one bee all by itself. He isolates that bee. Gets between it and its colleagues. Sends it into isolation and then stuns it. Walks over and tears its wings off. Not kills it, just takes its wings off, making sure that it's alive and, most importantly, it still has its deadly sting. He takes this bee, this wingless creature, he walks it up onto the porch, sets it down, tries to make it so that if just a footfall away from the person will come outside, he sets it there. It's angry and wingless. He walks out. This is a six-year-old. He gets himself, he lines himself up so that if you draw a line between him and the door, the bee's right in between. And he calls out to his sister tauntingly. He says something that will certainly assure that she's going to come out. And he says her name, and she does. She opens the door. She swings it open. She steps. Her foot does not land on the bee. She hurries down the steps, walks right up to him, punches him, turns around, runs back up the steps. He's stunned. She runs in the house, missing the bee. He chases after her and steps right on the bee. This is true. And now he's got a bee stinger in his knee and his foot. This is Joe over here, Joe. Listen, there's a proverb. Somewhere else in Proverbs, the wisdom of Proverbs says this. He who digs a pit will fall into it. It says that. I think it's Proverbs 26, 27, something like that. He who digs a pit will fall into it. The one who starts a stone rolling will be crushed by that stone. He who cripples a bee and tries to sting his sister will be stung by that bee. Now, back to the story with me for a moment. Joseph is there in front of his brothers. And he has a choice. He can, in effect, sting them if he wants. And they're not going to avoid the bee because he's in charge. And it is a decision that he would make. And if he did make it, he would be a person who sowed discord in the family yet again. And in a way, I think our sense of justice would make us want to say, yeah, he should pay them back for what they did. But what he does is exactly the opposite. And this is why I came to this for the end tonight. Because I want you to know that God hates discord in the family because of how much he loves peace in the family. And it's partly for the joy, the unique joy that it is brought by the love that comes from a family. God wants that for his people. And I want to tell you this too as an aside. Some of you, your families are so ruined. It's almost beyond hope. You hear me talk about the hope of a family that could love you and you think it'll never happen. Listen, if your father and mother forsake you, the Lord will take you up. That's a promise from Psalms. It's true. I've seen it happen in this community, in fact. I know there are people who come into this community who don't have fathers or mothers who love them. And I've seen you, some of you people, become fathers and mothers for the fatherless. And God does take us up into his family in a place like this. But the reason God loves peace so much is because of the power and strength that a person is given when they're in a loving family. And not just for their sake. For their sake, yes. But when you are strong because your family works right, then you are a person who can go out into the world and bring some light into this darkness. You can be Christ's agent in a world that so desperately needs to know who he is. Look at chapter 45. Flip over to that. Just a few pages ahead of, from Genesis where we were. This is what happens when Joseph's brothers are there before him. Look at chapter 45. I just want to read the narrative here. It This is right at the moment where they're in front of him again, and they don't recognize him. It says, then Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, send everyone away from me. So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He made all the guards get out, and he kept his brothers there, and then he showed them who he was. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Listen, he wasn't crying because he was sad, but because he was full of joy. Confronted by his enemies, he was full of joy. There's a reason why. It's beautiful. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him. So dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come closer to me. And they came closer. I imagine they were afraid, but listen, they didn't need to be. He said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land for these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth. Listen, this is the key to the ability that Joseph has to sow harmony rather than discord. It's that he looks at the situation not from his perspective, but from God's perspective. And every one of you in your family has a choice to make, whether you're a child or a parent, or a spouse, or whatever. You can either look at your relationships in your family from your perspective, in which case you'll always be wanting to know, what can I get from this family? Or you can look at your life and your family from God's perspective, in which you'll ask the opposite question, what can I give to this family? And I tell you right now,